Today's program is brought to you by the International Culinary Center, offering courses that range from classic French techniques in culinary, pastry, and bread baking to Italian studies to management, from culinary technology to food writing, from cake making to wine tasting. For more information, visit culinarycenter.com.
I'm Laura Stanley, host of Inside School Food. You are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Episode 171 of The Morning After. I'm your host, Sari Kamen.
And I'm Leslie Stockton. Today in the studio, we have Megan Giller of Chocolate Noise. But first, food news.
Indeed. And yet, first, it's Mother's Day.
Hey, Mom.
Hey, Mom.
Love
Shout out
you.
To all the moms out there.
Every mom.
Holla at your mom.
All my friends that are moms.
All my friends and not friends that are moms. We love you, Moms.
All the moms.
Okay. Now that we got that taken care of, a woman who may or may not be a mom filed a $5 million lawsuit against Starbucks for putting too much ice in her drinks.
No.
Yes, of course. I wouldn't lie.
I don't believe you.
It's from Huffington Post, which is apparently a reliable news source.
How much ice did they put in the drink?
Well, that's the problem. She says when you get a 24-ounce venti, for example, a venti is a large...
It's a big one.
She claims that the customer actually only gets 14 ounces of actual coffee, and then the ice takes up the remaining 10 ounces. So she's pretty pissed about that. She'd like to go up against Starbucks and represent everyone out there who feels like there's too much ice in their glass. And that's probably a lot of people.
So does she want a venti full of iced coffee with no ice?
I think she just wants less. She wants less ice. And a Starbucks representative.
Where is this woman?
Oh.
That's very. Geography is important because.
Geography is important.
I think Megan can attest. Texas people love their ice.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
We love our ice.
That's a good point.
Lawsuit would never come out of Texas.
We'd ask for more ice.
Always ask for more ice.
Oh, that's really funny. Well, the Starbucks representative said that the suit is without merit and that, quote, she said, "Our customers understand and expect that ice is an essential component of any iced beverage."
Yep, that's
Booyah.
True.
Booyah.
Who is
Gotta
this woman?
She's just like maybe a mom, maybe not a mom.
I don't think she's a mom.
I think she wants her $5 million.
That's what she wants.
I don't know. Do you guys think she's going to win?
No.
Who knows? She might.
I mean,
she might.
Event, when they say it's a 20-ounce drink, she's obviously taking them literally.
But, yeah.
But what are the components of a drink? Like, are you going to sue the bar for, like, the amount of volume your olives take up in your martini glass?
If you need 5 million guacamoles.
Five million clams.
That's the word I was looking for. I don't know.
This woman's
making me ragey. We wish her luck.
This woman's making me ragey. Let's move on.
Because you're like, you're from Texas, and you're like, team ice.
Team ice.
Yeah. Texas, you'd all just be like, too much coffee. I just need ice.
Oh, when they come and refill your iced tea in Texas and they don't put enough ice in there, I ask for like a fresh one from the weigh station.
Yeah, totally.
Plenty of ice and lemon.
And sugar.
She's not representing you in this case. Well, God bless her. Okay, in France, McDonald's France has added a menu of New York street food, apparently, to their menu. And
dirty water dogs?
You would think. Apparently, this menu is showing that nobody who's created this menu has clearly ever been to New York. Because recipes include a McWrap cheese, chips, an original sweet mustard burger.
Wait, chips like just potato like, chips like potato. Or fries?
Unclear. And a grilled cheese and bacon patty melt type thing. Because, yo, that's what we eat in New York,
Oh,
son.
My God. Dude,
and
let's go to that.
And a box filled with chicken nuggets served with a side of bacon and onion sauce.
Onion sauce. Okay.
What? Are you from Megan? I thought you lived in New York.
I know.
Yeah,
that's what I know.
You didn't know about bacon and onion sauce.
After we're done here at this show, I'm just going to go hit up that patty melt truck around the corner and just eat patty melt.
There's like
the
10 of them.
That actually is. What is it? A McWrap? Because like New Yorkers love their wraps.
We love a wrap.
It's like the original sweet mustard burger.
What is that? New Yorkers don't even really like mustard. This is like
ketchup. No, I actually totally disagree with you. But I think sweet mustard is not
That's weird.
We eat deli mustard.
We do.
Yeah.
We do love mustard. Like if you go to Katz's, like
brown mustard.
You actually aren't allowed to eat ketchup at Katz's. Did you know that?
Really?
Oh, yeah,
what happens if you eat
that.
It? You get kicked out.
You get kicked out.
Yeah, if you ask for it, they berate you.
But no sweet mustard bullshit. No, this is Deli Town. So, McDonald's, France. Bonjour, give me a call. I will consult for $5 million.
A boar's head turkey sandwich, yes. But
yeah, I think that's... I just, like, wonder how many people are eating it and they're like, oh, I'm... This is what New Yorkers eat.
This is what New York is.
And they
is.
Tell their friends. They're like, yo, we're in France, but I got the lowdown on New York food.
They're like, I've basically been to New York. I am a New Yorker at this
point. I don't need to go.
Yeah, really. Okay, save yourself the plane fare. Eat your sweet mustard burger. Viva la France. Okay, and this is good. Mm-hmm. This is in Hong Kong, but I think it hits very close to home. Kentucky Fried Chicken, wrong. KFC, they're not allowed to be called Kentucky Fried Chicken. KFC. In Hong Kong, has developed edible nail polish.
Oh,
yes.
Nope.
Yes. Nope. Two kinds. There's original and hot and spicy. And so this has like been rolled out as a promo in Hong Kong. And then the Hong Kongers can decide which ones. Stop, David. What, he's shouting at me. What? I went to grad school.
She's educated, David.
I'm educated. They can decide which one is their favorite, and then that will be rolled out.
Like the Lay's, like,
pick
your flavor.
I'm pretty sure my mom used to put that hot and spicy stuff on my fingers to get me to stop biting my
nails. Hot sauce?
The capsaicin nail polish to keep you from biting your nails. I got the same stuff.
Yep.
Okay, this is wrong on a couple of levels, and no hate to KFC, but eating your nail polish makes me, like, gag.
Yeah.
And that's gross, and it reminds me...
Well, you're not supposed to eat it. You're supposed to lick it, to be fair. Because there's actually directions that were in a statement, and the directions are, and I quote, "Consumers simply apply and dry, like regular nail polish, and then lick again and again."
You know
and
how
again.
Filthy your hands are?
Yeah. But, you know.
Also, it reminds me of that episode of My Strange Addiction with a woman who drank nail polish. So I can't.
So, no.
No.
But, I mean, this is great for her. This is like she's found a solution.
Tacos, you know, condiments for tacos,
but
everything.
Let's talk colors. Because if we're going to wear it, you know.
Okay.
We want to know what it looks like. Hot and spicy comes in a bolder, somewhat bright persimmon color.
Okay, I dig persimmons.
I do too. And the original is a bit understated in a light chicken flesh color.
That's just
chicken flesh.
Just flesh. Like chicken flesh.
That's actually how they describe it.
Cooked chicken flesh
or
raw chicken
flesh? That's how the news source describes
it. Wow.
Are we talking like cooked or raw chicken flesh?
I know.
Is there really a difference?
Yeah.
Oh.
I think I'd rather have uncooked chicken
flesh
nail polish color. Yeah, it is. Yeah.
It's a fleshy pink.
Yeah. Rather than that like weird beige.
But both have sparkles.
But,
yay!
Are those flavor sparkles though?
They're cake decoration sparkles.
I really don't know. But I can't wait to find out. Are vegetarians allowed to have chicken-flavored nail polish?
I don't know, but I think I just found the title of my first book.
I trademarked it too late. Okay, we're going to take a break. We'll be back with Megan.
The International Culinary Center is a proud sponsor of the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. The ICC, with locations in New York and California, provide cutting-edge education to future chefs, restaurateurs, and wine professionals. We're proud to claim Dan Barber, Bobby Flay, and David Chang among our honored alumni. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton from Chef Story. Check out our ICC website at internationalculinarycenter.com.
Food writer Megan Giller is on a journey to explore the world of American craft chocolate. Find her writing in Food & Wine, Slate, The New York Times, and her own site, Chocolate Noise, as well as in her forthcoming book about American bean-to-bar chocolate, to be published by Story Publishing in 2017. Welcome, Megan.
Thank you.
Welcome,
thanks for having
Megan.
Me. Hi.
I'm so excited to have you here because we've had so many conversations about chocolate.
I know.
So I think a good place to start right now is, so what is craft chocolate? What is bean-to-bar and how does that differ?
Yeah, so craft chocolate can mean a lot of things, but like you said, it generally means bean-to-bar chocolate, which means, when we get chocolate, it's something that's pre-made, made by a big corporation, and then sold to you, sold to confectioners in a giant block, basically, and they melt that down into bars and turn it into candies and that kind of stuff. So bean-to-bar makers actually start with whole cocoa beans and grind and roast them and turn them into chocolate bars themselves. So there's a huge amount of skill. There's a huge amount of working with people all over the globe to source these cocoa beans, and they turn into some pretty special chocolate bars.
Awesome. And there's like industrial chocolate,
yes,
for your Hershey's, and you also have couverture, which is what chocolatiers and like pastry chefs use.
Right.
What's it
exactly
called? Couverture.
Couverture. Tell us what couverture is.
Yeah. So couverture is basically a higher end chocolate that has a lot of added cocoa butter. So it's much more fluid and can cover like truffles and bonbons and that kind of stuff more
easily.
That's
a really fancy name.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Definitely.
French.
Yep.
France.
France. That's right.
So let's just get this out of the way because you wrote a piece in Slate,
yeah,
about the Mass brothers, and there was a scandal. But how much of a scandal was? Tell us what happened, and is it really a scandal? And then we can.
Yeah. So in December 2015, news kind of came out that when the Mass brothers got started back in 2008, making their own. They said they were making their own bean-to-bar chocolate back then, and they were one of the first companies in the country to be selling that kind of chocolate.
They said they went on a boat.
They said they went on a boat and sourced cocoa beans, and
they had a video, and I saw it.
They did. Yes, it was a very snazzy video.
Uh-huh.
But it came out that they actually had not been making their own chocolate
at the
very
beginning.
They
were not on a boat.
But, well...
what were they on a boat for?
So it came out that they had been remelting Valrhona chocolate, which is a couverture brand of chocolate, and forming that into bars and selling it as their own bean to bar. And it's unclear that they might have been making some of their own bean to bar and been selling couverture as their own. So that it's possible they could have been on a boat. But
I thought the boat came later.
The boat might have come later. I'm not sure about the timeline of the boat. But yeah, so it came out that they had been remelting Valrhona chocolate and selling it as their own. And people were really angry about it. People in the chocolate world had kind of known this was going on for years. A guy in Dallas who runs a food blog actually took the time. He'd been tracking this for years and went.
Do we know it's a guy?
It's definitely a guy.
Okay.
Yeah. Actually, I mean, I guess I've only spoken to him over email, so I can't. He is a real person.
Scott
though,
is so anonymous.
He is anonymous.
So Scott
yeah.
could be a woman
That's
named
true.
Daphne.
So, That's true.
So Scott of DallasFood.org.
Yes, that's right.
He
blew the lid off of it. And it had been kind of this open secret in the chocolate world that this had been happening. But no one had proved it. So he proved it, and everyone just went crazy. I mean, and it went way outside the chocolate world. I actually knew about it already and had written a piece for Slate about how experts just didn't like the way Mass Brothers tasted.
How did you know about it?
I knew about it because people had told me off the record, but I couldn't get anyone to go on the record for that original Slate piece, and so I left it out. And Scott and I had actually talked back a long time ago about whether or not to include it and what to do. So that was kind of interesting, but I'm glad he went for it full force, and then the mainstream media picked it up,
sure,
and it just gained a crazy amount of momentum. Yeah, it was everywhere.
It was everywhere, and I thought that for sure that was the end of Mass Brothers.
Me too.
I mean, yeah, because when Scott blew the lid off Noka, they went out of business.
Right.
What happened there?
So Noka was basically doing the same thing, but selling their chocolate for sometimes $1,000 a pound.
What?
Yeah. Insanity. Yeah, it was, where are they out of? Plano, Texas?
Something
like
that.
They were out of Plano, Texas, and you could buy directly from them, or they, the only retailer they sold through was Neiman Marcus. So all these rich Dallas ladies were just buying up this chocolate at ridiculously inflated prices, and they were claiming that they were making it themselves, but it was actually Bonnat,
which is a French brand. Also Couverture. Mm-hmm. Couverture is like our word of the day, I guess.
Yeah. And there's nothing against Bonnat. It's mm-hmm. delicious chocolate.
Yeah, it's amazing.
But they don't make Bonnat.
Well, I mean, the other thing is Bonnat, you can, you know, I'm not sure how much it is, maybe $10 a bar, maybe less, but, you know, it's way less than Nogo was charging.
Well, that's what was so egregious about the Mass Brothers is that their bars are so expensive. I mean, for me, the only time I would buy a bar is, like, a special occasion. Mm-hmm. So if you feel like you're willing, you know, to fork over the money for this, like, high-end product, you want to at least know that you're paying for what you think you're paying for.
Yes, and that it's going to be good. I mean,
right.
With the Mass, I it took them a long time to really like figure out their, you know, how to make chocolate. Sorry, that's a horrible thing to say, but
no, it's true. It takes a long time to figure out how to make bean to bar chocolate. It's an intense skill.
And so. and the first bar I ever bought of theirs was objectively bad.
Yeah.
But whatever. That's taste.
So did you question yourself? Were you like, oh, I must not know?
Oh, no, because I was working in the kitchen at Martha Stewart and, like, all the other food editors. I'm like, look at this really cute bar I got. Look at this paper. Isn't it amazing?
So cute. Yeah.
I'm like, look at this. And I'm like, let's eat it. And we ate. We all looked at each other like, this is bad, right? I'm like, mm-hmm.
I mean, you hit on it, though. The paper is so beautiful and their marketing is amazing. And I think that took them very, very far, which is also why people were angry that, like, they'd been taken in by the marketing, I guess.
Yeah, you know? I mean, I think a lot of it is that they just kind of, like, hit the really sweet spot of a very particular market, like, even with their own aesthetic.
Right.
You know, they were like, we're Brooklyn. Like, we are Brooklyn all day. Like, we've got these beards. We've got this, like, cool wrapping paper. And people really believed that, like, this was an artisan project, like, a local artisan product, and they wanted to support it for that reason.
Yeah, totally.
Marketing's everywhere.
Marketing is everything, but it just felt, I mean, above and beyond, like, the ethical components of the argument, it just felt, like, a transparency issue. Like, people felt, I felt deceived.
Right.
And whether or not they're making, you know, 100% bean to bar at this point, like, I'm not really interested in supporting an industry or, you know, a business that I feel like lied to me.
Well, I think that's something that is really tricky because there are a lot of really good artisans, I mean, within chocolate and without, that are making, they're really honest and are making good products and charging $10. But I think the Mass thing, one thing I was worried about is the conversation kind of turned into like, well, how can we trust any of these artisans and why should we pay $10 for anything? And it just kind of made me cringe because it's like there are so many good chocolate brands out there that are, you know, that are small makers that charge that much and you could be getting a delicious bar and knowing that the beans are coming from somewhere really ethical and that they like spend a lot of time making that bar too.
Yeah. So what's kind of been the aftermath? I mean, obviously this blew up in the media, blew up everywhere. I thought that Mass Brothers was going to go away, but they haven't.
Right. And they're opening a giant new factory and I guess chocolate beer brewing, factory that's going to be part of it very soon. And where is it, Leslie?
The Navy Yard has a new food hall that's coming.
And then they already opened their LA store. So, I mean, they're doing really well. It's interesting, though, because a lot of boutiques have pulled their bars. This very big grocery chain in Texas called Central Market stopped carrying them. Mm-hmm. So, they did. I know.
I love Central Market so much.
I love Central Market too. And they actually have a really great chocolate selection, at least where I used to live in Austin. So,
I just find this shocking that, like, after all of this happens, that they're almost being rewarded.
Right.
I mean,
it seemed like people cared because obviously the media was all over it. And you said something really poignant, Leslie, like, when is a scandal, like, more of a scandal in the media than it is in reality?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if people liked Mass Brothers, they're going to continue to buy it.
I also think, like, you know, so Pete Wells wrote a story right after this kind of summarizing what had happened in the aftermath of it. And he said, you know, Mass Brothers really helped shape the Bean to Bar movement at the very beginning, but now they're really diverging from it. And if you look at their new packaging, that's definitely true. Like, they don't put a lot of stuff that other Bean to Bar makers put on the labels. They don't put where the beans are from. They don't put anything about direct sourcing.
They used to.
They used to, but then they don't, they're not as transparent about what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And so it is almost like a different type of company than the rest of the Bean to Bar makers in the country. So, and the people who like it, you know, they're buying it a lot of times for the very pretty labels and that sort of thing, giving it as gifts. So it, I don't know if they're going to be taken as serious chocolate anymore, but they definitely still have a market.
You hit the nail on the head. People are going to buy it because it's pretty and it makes a nice hostess gift. You get three of them, you know, stack them up, put a bow on it.
Do these people not know? Like, do they not read the news or they just don't care?
Don't care, don't know. And I also think that, you know, food is fashion for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and they don't care if anything is objectively good, if it's popular and if it's quote what they're supposed to be eating, because mm-hmm. that's what the fashionable people are eating, or that's what's hip. Take the cronut.
Yeah.
Oh, the cronut.
Take
yeah.
the cronut.
Right. But it's not as, I mean, it's not as just inherently controversial. I mean, it's just like a fucking donut and a croissant.
I know, but what I'm talking about is just that, like, you know, the media writes about something and people obey.
It's true. But then so often in these things, there's like a backlash.
Yeah, there is a backlash because, you know, but I still see people like Instagramming their Mass Brothers bars.
I would love to talk to the people that are opening the Navy Yard food hall and just ask them, you know, like, just why? Like, why the Mass Brothers instead of another business? Are they just, I mean, it just must come down to dollars because they believe that they're still going to make a huge profit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
But to me, it just feels like that's a risk because, you know, this is Brooklyn. Like, people in Brooklyn, like, want to know where their food comes from and they don't like being lied to when it comes to small businesses.
I think there are a lot of people in Brooklyn, though, who still support the Mass Brothers. And, I mean, as I was covering this whole thing, a lot of people defended them who used to work for them and that kind of stuff, and they didn't believe what was in the media.
People actually think that that's not a true story.
Right, or they say, what's the big deal?
Or it's exaggerated.
Or it's exaggerated, yeah. So they still support, a lot of people still support the Mass Brothers.
Did the Mass Brothers ever respond to the scandal?
They did. The New York Times went and interviewed them and had a tour of their factory, and they talked about it. And then they actually had to put some information on their website, including a Q&A of what they, you know, do and do not do on their site.
There was an emotionally charged letter from them on their site
as well.
And it went up in December.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that. So can we go back to how much about the $10 bar?
Yeah.
The $10 bar, and I think really fueled that, you know, like, I'm paying $10 for a lie. But because people like, what am I doing? So, but is $10 fair? And is a Hershey's bar
like
too cheap?
Not talking about Mass Brothers.
Yeah, yeah.
Bean to bar.
Yeah, an actual bean to bar. Like, is that fair? Or is Hershey's too cheap? Or is that too expensive? And there's like a sweet spot in the middle.
So I think that people were so shocked at the $10 because that was the first time a lot of people had ever heard of paying that much for a chocolate bar. Where this bean to bar movement that's happening, a lot of those bars cost that much. And I don't think it's too expensive. And you're actually now seeing bars that are more like $12. I know of one that's, I think, $18 or $19.
What makes a bar cost that much?
So when you talk about Bean to Bar chocolate and craft chocolate versus industrial chocolate, there's a huge difference. So let's just talk about industrial chocolate first, I guess. So the beans that they're buying, who knows how they're being, like, those trees are being grown and how the beans are being processed, very poorly, usually. And the farmers are getting paid nothing. Like, they're basically in indentured servitude to do that. And so they get paid next to nothing. The beans are really low quality and not processed correctly. And then when they get it actually to the factory, in order to kind of cover up how bad the beans are, they will just over roast them, like crazy over roast them. And then, because that'll at least burn all out, all the acidity and that kind of stuff out. And then they just cover up all of that with sugar and vanilla and whatever else. So when you buy a Hershey bar or something kind of on that level, there's very little cacao in it, actually. I mean, there's, like, in a Hershey's bar, I think there's 11%. Mm-hmm. And then the rest is, you know, cocoa butter, well, sorry, vanilla, sugar, soy lecithin, all these other things that are not, you know, to cover up the flavor, the bad flavor of the beans. But I think the biggest issue is, like, the ethics in that there's not any care going into the process of how to make this bark.
So where in the world is this happening?
So it's happening a lot in Africa, mm-hmm. a lot in South America, Central America. Cacao grows anywhere, like, 20 degrees above the equator and 20 degrees below. So anywhere in the whole world on that, you know, strip mm-hmm. or belt or whatever, that's where they're getting the cacao. But mainly from Africa. That's where all the bulk cacao is coming from. So that's one side. So that's kind of why they can not pay anything. Or, you know, we can pay a dollar or less for all this candy. So then on the bean to bar side, people are actually going to the countries of origin themselves, meeting farmers, like working with them to try to pay them
getting
a lot more. They are. They're getting on their boats.
Getting on that boat, well, yo.
Yeah. We'll see how often that happens.
Making a little video.
That's right. But yeah, I mean, for example, Sean Askinosi of Askinosi Chocolate actually goes to Tanzania and the Philippines probably several times a year and works with the farmers there. He's helped build schools. He sends them textbooks. He pays an insane amount more than even fair trade for these really high quality cocoa beans and really invests in the farmers and shares profits with them. So they're starting out with much better beans that are carefully processed and they're paying the farmers more. And then they bring that back and they take a lot of care through every step of the process, making it in small batches and that sort of thing. And then I think a big difference is also, you know, when we're talking about industrial chocolate, it's like soy lecithin and sugar and all this other crap in there. And then bean to bar chocolate really prides itself on being just, for a lot of them, just cocoa beans and sugar. Like, I brought this dandelion bar with me today to show you guys because I think
Shout out to Todd.
Yeah, Todd Masonis from Dandelion is awesome. But yeah, I mean, they only use cocoa beans and sugar. They don't put anything else in any of their bars. And so when you try it, it's a really different type of chocolate than that kind of gross industrial chocolate that doesn't taste like anything.
I imagine it's not as sweet as what most people think chocolate.
Well, no, it is. So if you're used to eating dark chocolate, it'll be as sweet because it has the same amount. So a 70% industrial dark sugar or dark chocolate will have the same amount of sugar for the most part as this. But it actually might taste sweeter in some ways because the cacao can be sweeter if it's processed correctly.
It's much more complex, too, because sometimes, let's take like a, not a Valrhona, but Lindt. Let's do Lindor, right?
Yeah.
Their 70% is not going to be as robust as that because they're going to pad that 70% with cocoa butter because cocoa butter is cheap.
Right. And it makes everything smoother,
so
which
smooth.
We like think is delicious.
Yeah.
You know, but the actual
but flavorless.
Right. And so you won't actually taste that much. Whereas in a bean to bar chocolate bar, you'll get notes of like red berries and, you know, toasted nuts. And one thing I find a lot in bean to bar chocolate, which is kind of weird, is marshmallow. Like that's a flavor that comes through.
Yeah.
So all these things you would never think of in chocolate.
It's kind of the same with coffee.
Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm. It's exactly
even,
like coffee.
Even wine.
Yeah.
Yep. I think chocolate is the same. It's just, you know, decades behind these other industries. And I think it's going that direction.
So, back to Askinosi.
Yeah.
You know, it's that care that is required to make great chocolate, right?
Yes.
I mean, he works with the farmers. He's involved with the community, you know, because a very important part, very important step of the chocolate making process is in the farmer's hands.
Absolutely.
And that's fermenting.
Yes.
And so talk about that.
Yeah, people never think about chocolate as actually like a fermented food, but it is. And Leslie's right that the first two steps really of the processing process, for for lack of a better word, really it kind of locks in the flavor of the chocolate. So when you get these raw beans, you know, you break open the pod, there are these raw beans that actually don't taste anything like chocolate, and they're covered in this white stuff that kind of tastes like lychee a little bit. It's like a fruit.
Yeah.
Have you had it?
I have had it in Costa Rica.
Oh my God, awesome.
And
cool.
I was so shocked because I had no idea.
It's delicious,
that's what
cacao looked
like. And it tastes really good, and you suck on it, and you kind of like eat the white flesh, and it does have a little bit of like a tropical fruit flavor.
Right.
And then you get to this hard
nut. And it's bitter
and you're
gross.
Like, could this possibly
how is this
become
chocolate?
Right. Yeah.
And how did someone figure that out?
I always wonder that too, especially, also with like corn, like corn tortillas and all that kind of stuff. It's the same sort of like, you know, hundreds of years or whoever. Right. I don't know. Anyway.
Like, who ate a lobster?
Who figured out nixtamalization?
Yes. I know. It's weird.
It's the process of alkalizing corn to bring out the niacin so we can digest it.
Damn. We fancy up in here. Yeah.
That's right.
No, but like, and almonds?
Yeah.
I mean, if you've seen like a green almond.
Yeah.
It's so crazy. People are just like really adventurous.
I think it's out of necessity.
I would imagine so. Chocolate seems like
we'll try everything and see what works.
The corn thing, like I heard the nixtamalization, I heard that it was like they think that some like an ashes from the fire flew into the pot with the corn and created that effect, and it was the first time, and it was an accident, and you know,
it's as good of a theory as any.
Right, I know. who knows if that's actually true or not, but I have no idea how anyone figured out to ferment and dry cocoa and like turn it and, you know, pound it and turn it into this thing. But I mean, it was someone in the pre-Mesoamericans and the Olmecs and the Mayans and Aztecs, but anyway, that might be
the same people who figured out nixtamalization.
That's right. They're geniuses.
But let's go back to chocolate. Anyway,
yeah.
So this is an old school conversation.
I know.
But yeah, so when you've got that like fresh pod and the fresh beans, and you have to ferment them, and so they sit and ferment in that pulp that you tried that was so like delicious and fruity, and turn and you know all the alcohols kind of like help burn out the acids and stuff and so that locks in a lot of flavors. And then when you dry the beans, that locks in a lot of flavor too. So like if you get crappy beans, there's only so much you can do with those beans in terms of making chocolate. So those two steps that happen, and they have to happen at the farm, they have to happen at origin, because you can't like transport them and
you can't transport raw beans,
right? So that's why so many people are going to origin and like helping farmers improve that process, because in some places they know how to do it, in other places it's become a cash crop and they just, you know, they can't get paid that much more for well fermented and dried cacao, so why do it, you know?
Yeah. So okay, I want to know, what chocolate are you really excited about right now?
Yeah,
give me the makers.
Okay, I have a list actually. Well, so I don't know if you guys know Fruition, which is in upstate New York, but I am obsessed with everything they make. The guy, so Brian Graham is the maker, and he started out as a pastry chef and chocolatier, and so he just has a really good idea of how to make confections too, and how to just make everything delicious. So he makes really amazing single origin bars, but he also makes like crazy good truffles and like, you know, caramelized white chocolate, and actually that's not right, toasted white chocolate bars and stuff like that.
But
that
are just like white chocolate isn't chocolate.
White chocolate is legally chocolate in the U.S.
It's just sweetened cocoa butter.
It's cocoa butter.
That's all it is.
But I hate white chocolate, but I love his toasted white chocolate. So don't write white chocolate off until you try his.
Okay.
But so him, Dandelion, which I brought here today and is delicious. They're out of San Francisco and they just use cocoa beans and sugar. And I just think everything they make, they focus on single origin bars. You can really taste the flavor notes. It's hard to come by because they're expanding, but they are in high demand right now.
Yeah.
Askenosi, who I mentioned, I love their single origin bars, but I also really love their inclusion bars. You know, they make one with vanilla beans and sugar that's actually really grainy.
What does the inclusion bar mean?
So inclusion is just a fancy word for like stuff in your chocolate. So
nuts,
if there's like
salt.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh.
Fruit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just so like equitable though. Like everyone.
Inclusion.
Everyone.
Yeah. Jump into my chocolate bar.
Warm and fuzzy about it.
Yeah.
It's like a no judgment bar.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. So actually another inclusion bar I love is the PBJ OMG bar from Patrick Chocolate, which is a peanut butter. So, but it's made with, but it's made with Madagascar beans, which are notoriously fruity. So that's why it's called OMG, PBJ. So you've got like the, you know, grown-ups PBJ, like the beans with the fruitiness and then the peanut butter itself.
Oh, so, I get it.
Yeah.
And I love peanut butter and chocolate.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I have to give a shout out to Soma too, which is a Canadian company. And I mainly write about American companies, but I am obsessed with Soma, and they are in Toronto. It's a couple, and they actually have a whole cafe and store where they make ice cream and brownies and everything delicious, and I need to go there. But they make some of the most amazing chocolate I've ever had in my life.
Shout out to our Soma. Neighbors to the north.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Chocolate from north of the wall.
That's right.
Justin Trudeau. Hey, I have a question.
Yeah.
Actually, not a question. I was in Thailand a couple weeks ago, and I ate a green tea Kit Kat bar.
Yes, I know. They're so
thoughts
on the rage there. In the rage there.
That's my question.
I don't know
thoughts?
If I have thoughts, except that there are some really crazy Kit Kat flavors
it
and
was
chocolate flavors
probably one
in
of
Asia.
The most delicious things I've ever, you know, tasted. But now I feel, like, really bad about it.
Was it?
Why?
Because it's, like, I guess it's really unethical.
It is? Oh, the Kit Kat bar? Yeah.
Yeah, well, I ate industrial chocolate, but I only ate two. It's a good thing they don't have green tea Kit Kat bars here. That's all I'm saying.
I'll tell you what, though.
I'd be unstoppable.
They do. Go to Chinatown.
Oh!
I always wonder if they import them, like, if they're made here and imported to Asia, or if they're made in Asia
they
and then
really
imported here.
They taste like green tea.
They have to import them here.
Yeah. I've always wondered that.
Can someone make a bean-to-bar green tea chocolate, please? Like, make it ethical and, like, everyone should get paid really well.
Yeah,
like,
mm-hmm.
That's actually one I haven't seen. I've seen some matcha inclusions and stuff, mm-hmm. but yeah, I haven't seen maybe a green tea bar.
All green tea, all day, all matcha.
Was it white chocolate infused with matcha? Was it green?
It was green.
Okay,
so no, I think it tasted more like white chocolate mm-hmm, infused mm-hmm. with green tea.
Yeah, that would make sense.
I'll totally get my hands on one of those.
It's so delightful. Interesting. Asia is very interested in chocolate right now, and you know there's this global chocolate shortage that everyone keeps freaking out about, and I think it's partially because Asia has developed a taste for chocolate mm-hmm. and so now there's mm-hmm. not enough chocolate for everyone in the world.
Yeah, I mean, you just get really jealous when you go to Asia because they have awesome flavored everything. Like,
yeah,
they have
the
best flavored chips, like mm-hmm. so interesting, and there's so many varieties of just everything. Like, you could, if you really like junk food, you could really freak out there.
I agree.
Yeah. Wow.
So much. We could
so much. Yeah.
There is so much to talk about.
We should probably take a break.
Okay.
And then we'll be back with the morning after quiz.
The one and only Dave Arnold brings the noise to Heritage Radio Network every Tuesday on Cooking Issues.
Coming to you live on the Heritage Radio Network from Roberta's Pizzeria in Bushwick, Brooklyn!
If the bomb was going to drop, and you only had 15 minutes, which is like, I can make a sandwich in 15 minutes. He'd be eating a sandwich.
I'd kiss my wife, make a sandwich.
If you believe that it's all about to be over, why eat healthy? Not a freaking Neanderthal. I like a tempered ice cream sandwich. But it's the only way to get around it if you're a party master, because you're going to wind up, like, your kitchen's going to fill with dishes. And
some people have commercial dishwashers in their house.
Who?
I've seen them.
Who?
I've seen them.
Who?
Really rich people.
For more mile-a-minute knowledge from Dave and the crew, listen to Cooking Issues, available on Heritage Radio Network, iTunes, and Stitcher.
And we're back. You're listening to The Morning After on Heritage Radio Network. We've been talking all things chocolate with food writer Megan Geller. But now it is time for The Morning After quiz. Isn't it, Leslie?
Yes, it is. And I'm so excited about today's quiz. Megan Geller, you are from Texas.
I am.
So this Uh-oh. Quiz is a little out of the normal. So basically, it's a multiple choice quiz. It's the least important quiz of your life.
Okay, hashtag. I like that.
And we're just going to have fun and laugh.
Okay.
So your last name is Giller,
that's
which
right.
reminds me of Gillies in Texas. Were you ever familiar with Gillies?
I don't know Gillies.
It's the most famous honky-tonk, biggest honky-tonk ever. And it's not there anymore, but it was in Pasadena.
Wait, so I have a really ignorant... Yeah. I don't know what a honky-tonk is.
A honky-tonk is where you go and you dance and you listen to okay. live
That's what I
country
thought,
music
but I wasn't sure.
And drink beer and maybe get into a fight. But Gillies had a mechanical bull.
Oh,
they
oh
had all the things.
And yeah. Urban Cowboy was filmed there.
Was it really? Wow.
Yeah.
I so, missed out. I only went to these tiny little honky-tonks. Not,
I thought
not
you,
the giant
I thought before
ones.
You said honky...
Oh, honky-tonk?
Honky-tonk.
Honky-tonk.
It's full of hunks.
Which is where we're going to
go. I thought it was like a hunky guy named
We're going to Hunky Town after this.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, Megan Giller, what do you know about Gillies? First question. Hank Williams Jr. performed at Gillies when he was just barely out of puberty and got into some shenanigans. What happened? A, he lost his virginity to a barfly behind the rodeo arena. B, he sat in the beer cooler and got drunk off Pearl.
What?
Pearl is Texas beer.
So many insider things here.
Yeah, Pearl beer.
Was Lone Star not around then?
I'm sure it was, but Pearl.
Yeah. Okay.
I like Pearl. C, good. Picked a fight with a patron and got knocked out. Hank Williams Ooh. Jr. What did he do?
I think I'm going to have to go with A, just because making out sounds more fun.
No, he actually sat in the cooler and got drunk off Pearl.
That's the one I thought
because
was actually probably
great. It was never air conditioned in there, and it was a big steel box with a concrete floor. The owner, Sherwood Cryer, said in an interview, "Boy, his mama whooped his ass bad over his getting drunk."
I was waiting for D. Lost his virginity to a mechanical bull.
Oh, ouch.
Yeah, right. Yikes.
Okay. Gillies was famous for being a rough honky-tonk as fights broke out nightly. What actually happened during one of these barroom brawls? A, the biggest cop in Pasadena tried to break up a fight only to have the brawlers turn on him, beat the crap out of him, and take his gun. B, when a brawler tried to run from the cops, he got clotheslined at the door by Willie Nelson and Waylon Jennings.
Oh, that would be amazing.
C, one unruly patron was gagged and hogtied by the staff and left in the corner until they calmed down.
Oof.
Oh, my God. Those are all pretty wild.
Aren't they?
Yeah.
They all seem plausible.
I know.
Texas.
Well, Waylon Jennings and Willie Nelson together.
It's not true.
No, I know. Oh. She thought I picked that one. Well, okay,
I thought you picked it.
We'll say I went with that one.
And now
I know that. Yeah, that's pretty wild.
But, okay, so what do you think it is?
I think I'm going to go with A. Actually.
It is A.
Yeah.
And nothing tickles me more about, I don't know why, but when I hear of anyone like taking a gun from a cop, it just makes me laugh harder than anything. I don't know why.
Because you're from Texas.
Because I'm from Texas. I'm like, oh my God, you took a gun from a cop. You're crazy. Mickey Gilley, the club's namesake, is a country musician. Which one of these is an actual Mickey Gilley song? A, if I had shot you when I wanted to, I'd be out of jail by now.
Do you let that be a song?
B, I liked you better before I knew you so well. C,
say that about several of my ex-wives.
I know. C, don't the girls all get prettier at closing time?
Oh, that could be.
The good old beer goggles.
I think I'm going to go with B.
It's C.
Really? Oh, man.
The
girls get prettier at closing time.
A is a Waylon Jennings song because he's a badass.
Waylon Jennings is my favorite.
And I don't know who wrote B. I was running out the door.
But that's a real song.
They're all real songs.
Wow. Yeah.
But Mickey Gilley won the CMA for best song for Don't the Girls All Look Pretty at closing time in 1976.
When you're desperate.
Yeah.
That's right.
And in an interview with Dale Watson, you know who Dale Watson is?
I love Dale Watson.
He's a country singer.
He has a tattoo of his own face on his arm.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I love Dale Watson. I used to go see him at the Chicken Shit Bingo at Jenny's Little Longhorn.
I love Jenny's Little Longhorn. That was my favorite.
In Austin, Texas. Love you Jenny's Little Longhorn.
Real Texas. I know. Right now. I'm feeling a little uncomfortable.
So they were taking
out of Brooklyn.
Oh, please. I'll go back. They were doing a oral history of Gillies, mm-hmm. and they talked to Dale Watson, and they asked him if the girls all get prettier at closing time at Gillies, and he said, no, it was Pasadena. So that's all I have.
Okay. Nice. On that note... Megan, thank you so much for coming to the Morning After.
This was so much fun.
I learned so much. Eat your bean to bars, people.
That's right.
Ethical chocolate. Make sure everybody gets paid.
Yeah, no more Hershey's.
No more Hershey's, sorry.
Okay. And shout out once again to the moms.
Love you, Mom.
Bye, Mom.
And Betty.
Bean to bar.
Mom and Betty. Betty Stockton's my stepmom. Love you, too.
Okay. We'll see you next week on the Morning After on Heritage Radio.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.